to introduce our next speaker, Dr. Alawali Trotman. Dr. Trotman is the director of the Louisville Metro Department of Public Health and Wellness. Many people may, how many people here saw Natural Causes?
One or two.
One or two. Well, how many people saw Dr. Trotman in Natural Causes? So then he is no stranger to this audience. So without further ado, Dr. Alawali Trotman.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everybody. So, initially I was going to be the first speaker, and everything I said would be fresh because I was the first speaker. But I had to go and do a moderator panel opening for someone else, so now I'm the second speaker, and half of what I'm going to say has already been said. So, when I give you the right signal, just kind of close your eyes, take a nod, and come back when I call you. You know, first one. How many made the opening session the other night? Okay, so, you know, it was a marvelous session. I mean, and the energy around what the big principles are was all throughout that room. And the energy around the big principles of justice, social justice, equity, human rights, etc., is what this is still all about. To whatever extent we talk about the details and the specifics of how we get to where we want to get to, it's still about the basic elements of social justice, health, equity, human rights. So I wanted to make sure we were on the same page fairly quickly by going over these concepts in the way that I see them in the work that we're all doing. So we'll talk briefly about health equity as a concept, human rights as a concept, social justice, all of which belong together. Causes are the causes, you know, is another way of saying social determinants of health. And last but not least, talk to you a little bit about the Center for Health Equity and some of the work that we're doing on the ground. Somebody wake that brother up. So, I think there's one slide before that. Yeah. I have two definitions of health equity. And one of in the context of discussion, there's a lot of back and forth about what we're calling this. You know, there's health disparities, health equity, health differences, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What's the right way to talk about this? RWJ recently put out a document, a new way to talk about social determinants of health. You may have seen that, suggesting that conversations using words like inadequacies and unfairness and injustice are turning people off, and we shouldn't use that language. So another conversation we need to have within ourselves as a family. But this is a definition from the CDC from 2007, who were encouraged to start looking at the notion of health equity as what they do as an institution. And this is the concept. This is the definition they came up with. It's a fair distribution of health determinants, outcomes, and resources within and between segments of the population, regardless of social standing. Not bad. I like the next one better, though. The next one kind of comes out of the philosophy and the ethos of the World Health Organization, because it says that, and this is a long definition, health equity is the realization by all people at the highest attainable level of health. That's the key phrase from their declarations in past years, including 1948. Achieving health equity requires valuing all individuals and populations equally. It entails focused and ongoing societal efforts to address avoidable inequalities by assuring the conditions for optimal health. The CDC, the Institute of Medicine document, the Future of Public Health said that's what we're supposed to do. Public health is about assuring the conditions in which people can be healthy, so it's in this definition. Optimal health for all groups, particularly those who have experienced historical or contemporary injustice and socioeconomic disadvantage. Very, very explicit what this definition is all about. Next. This is a summary. I gave a talk recently on human rights and health as a human right, and I love this slide. This is a summary of what the concept of human rights is all about. And if we say in our speech and our context that health is a basic human right, that's what we're talking about. If a politician comes to you and says, "I believe health is a human right," that's what he better be talking about. Otherwise, his face talking garbage and let him do it anyway. It's universal. The birthright of every human being. There's no other justification necessary for a human right other than you're born in this universe and you're therefore entitled to this right. It's aimed at safeguarding the inherent dignity and equal worth of everyone. It's inalienable. You can't take it away. That's a word that's in the Declaration of Independence, which we sometimes forget, that holds these truths to be self-evident. All people, you know that one, right? Interdependent and interrelated. Every human right is connected. So if one human right is abridged, they're all affected. So if the human right to life is affected, clearly it affects everything else. If the right to health is affected, it affects all the other human rights that we talk about. So they're interconnected. You cannot separate them one from another. It's articulated as an entitlement of individuals and groups generating obligations of action and omission. And this last one is important. It's internationally guaranteed and legally protected. So this is what we're talking about when we say human rights. This is a very strong position to take when it comes to health. Next. And I love this. There are 112 countries around the world that have the language of health as a human right or medical care in their constitution. I chose this one because it's so powerful. It's the nation of Ecuador. It says that the state guarantees the right to health, its promotion and protection through the development of food security in the constitution, the provision of drinking water, basic sanitation, promotion of a healthy family, work and community environment, and the possibility of permanent and uninterrupted access to health services in conformity with the principles of what? Equity, universality, solidarity, quality, and efficiency in the Constitution of the Nation of Ecuador. Guiding light to what we all should be talking about. I don't know if he's still working on this, but you know that Jesse Jackson Jr. In Congress was pushing for an amendment to the United States Constitution several years ago that would have put the language of health as a basic human right into the United States Constitution. I don't think he was successful, but we should not give up on the idea. Next. So what is justice as a concept? Fairness is, and you heard this from our brother the other night. Fairness talks about equality. Justice talks about equality of fairness and the principle of moral rightness, and the word equity is in the definition of justice. So it's commingled. And then a conformity in action or attitude. So if somebody gets mistreated because they happen to be poor, Latino, African American, or whatever, by definition, that is not justice. That is an injustice. If you go into a hospital and you get sent to the wrong room because you happen to be black or Latino, and you have a subsequent bad result because of provider bias, that's an injustice, very clearly. And you know, we're full of this. Next. Social justice, and it's taking those principles of individual justice and raising it to the highest level of society, and it implies, there's the word again, equity, equal access to societal goods and power, goods and services. If you remember the World Health Organization document, Closing the Gap in a Generation by Focus on Social Determinants of Health, they say this is one of the three strategies we need to employ to level the playing field. That is, focus on the unequal access to power, goods, and services, and that will ultimately make the difference in terms of the health of populations. And then the universal respect to human and civil rights. Next. I think I have 10 minutes.
Take your time.
Take,
you don't
take
have to rush.
Take well, in that case. Let me take off my jacket here.
So, I just think it
so some of the conclusions on this notion of health and social justice are on this one. And these are all thoughts of mine from reading the literature. Health status and equity directly related to the continued existence of social injustice. That's basic. And we should always keep that in mind. When we talk about health inequities, we're talking about social injustice. Next, the existence of this injustice, typified by the continued growth of the gap between the haves and have-nots, lack of access, and so on, is unethical and immoral, aside from being impractical, and not sustainable over long periods of time. It occurs to me, I should tell you, I'm from the Bronx, New York, and I talk very fast, and when I get pressed for time, I think of Star Trek, and I do Warp 9 on the curve, and you never catch up with me. And the focus on equity and justice must rise out of social revolution. So that is to say that a new social movement based upon health equity and social justice and the right to health is what needs to develop in this country for us to push those who need to be pushed to make the right decisions to change the landscape. City of Cincinnati, maybe a year or two ago, started organizing and demonstrating around the right to health, marches in the streets, rallies, kind of made me think about the 1960s, which was a really wonderful time. If you hadn't been around, I'm so sorry you missed it. Next. Here's the document I referred to, WHO, Closing the Gap in a Generation, Health Equity Through Action on the Social Determinants of Health is the title. If you've not seen this document, please get it. You can still download it, I think, off WHO's website. And here is one of the primary conclusions of that study. Social justice is a matter of life and death. It affects the way people live, their consequent chance of illness, and their risk of premature death. The previous discussion that you just had, showing you essentially maps, GIS maps, of socioeconomic status, access, et cetera, and then on top of those GIS maps that show you hypertension, diabetes, heart disease, cancer, homicide, all that makes it very clear that this is what we're talking about. Next. So I'm going to talk to you for a bit about the Center for Health Equity, which I started in Louisville about 5 or 6 years ago. Okay. The first thing you'll notice is it's in the community. This is not a building downtown Louisville. This is the West End, where the people live, where the folk are. This is the opening ceremony that we had to invite the community in and begin talking about this notion of health equity and social justice. Next. This is the mission statement for the center. And I want you to notice that this is a center for health equity within a health department, but we recognize that our process is about a civic process that builds social engagement, autonomy, and movement to strengthen communities and influence public policy in an effort to create health equity. So we are saying from day one with the center, you get short of breath in this town, don't you? from the center, that this is not business as usual. This is not, but matter of fact, I'll tell you, when I was interviewing the two people, finalists for the directorship, I asked each one of them separately, you know, what do you want to do with the Center for Health Equity? And one said, well, you know, I want to focus on social determinants and changing the paradigm and building capacity in the community. I said, very good. The other one said, we want a new center where we can provide service to the community and be about health education. I said, you ain't getting this job. And that's not what this is. This is about building capacity in community, educating community on policy change, policy development, advocacy, collaboration, partnership building, putting pressure on the mayor and the city council to do the things that need to be done, focusing on social food justice, which I think is one of my slides. Next one. Some of the current work, and this is only some of the things that we're doing. I'm not going to highlight all of them. I will mention this, the framing research for a minute, because we recognize that we need to talk to our community. And we were struggling with what was the rest of the language that we should use that would make the connections with the folk. And we brought a company in to do this framing research. And interestingly enough, what we found is that as a result of the research, basically everybody they interviewed in the African-American community, even the Latino community and some whites who were part of the interview, every last one of them, whether they were poor, middle class, conservative, liberal, all said the same thing. Your health is about your personal behavior and your personal choice. And surprised that we're convinced that this is the right way, that it's about social change and all the things that we talk about. The average person in the street said, your bad health, you made a bad choice. So we all have a lot of work to do in figuring out the best way to have this conversation. At the same time, not demeaning or talking down to people, which is my problem with the RWJ document, which says that we can't use language of freedom and justice and all, that we have to talk about health begins in where you live, work, and play. Ooh, what we do. Sorry about that. We've been holding a series of community hearings around Metro Louisville with specific folks to talk about this issue of health equity. We've given out mini grants for the last almost four years to small community-based organizations to do work around these concepts. For instance, one grantee worked with the law school to train youth at a high school on land use, young black kids in a high school. Another one put on a several day conference on poverty in African American women, etc. So these are the kind of mini grants that we've been given for the last several years. We all do speaker series, so nothing new there. This is important. Retraining the workforce to a dialogue process. And oh, that's the folks in another room, I'm sorry. The dialogue process, the notion of a local health department or a state health department or any agency doing this work, and you haven't made sure that the people that work for you are on the same page and understand the principles and the concepts, then you stepped out too far without making sure that your troops are sitting on your side rather than far behind. So we've been using unnatural causes, dialoguing around what health equity is all about to move the health department to a position where people know this is what we're talking about. We also trained our outreach workers as community organizers from a local organization that does this kind of work. You're all probably familiar with Undoing Racism workshops, People's Institute. Very, very expensive, very, very effective. We've been running those for about 3 years now, and I've had a summit next. I heard somebody asking a few minutes ago, what's Photo Voice? We've been using Photo Voice now for some time with youth as a means of youth empowerment. I don't think I put any slides in this presentation today, but as a means of youth empowerment. Photo Voice, for those who are not familiar, is essentially working with in this case, youth, having conversations with them about health, barriers to health, what their perceptions are, their concepts, not telling them, but engaging in conversation and giving them digital cameras and saying, now go forth and take pictures and write script and come back and let's see what you've got. And then you take that information, you provide it to policymakers by the youth themselves, so they become empowered in the process of talking to policymakers and learn something about the policy process. Let me skip down to food justice. Our Center for Health Equity organized a task force through Metropolitan Louisville called the Food Security Task Force. Through the work of the task force, identified what's already been mentioned, that we have food deserts in Metropolitan Louisville. Territory, one surprise, food deserts in terms of not only access to fresh produce, but transportation. So 55% of the community that we surveyed didn't have a car. The nearest supermarket was miles away. In between was nothing but fast food restaurants and convenience stores. So you can't expect somebody to make the right choice if there's no choice available and that's a healthy one. So you have to fix that, you have that structural change. Next. This is brand new. We got a grant from the Kellogg Foundation to do something called racial healing, where we're bringing together African-American and white youth from the same neighborhoods to begin the process of educating them around this whole thing called race and racism, and how do we get past that and become a healed community. Health impact assessments, you've all heard it by now, I'm sure. We are, under our new grant, our CDC grant, we're pushing for the city of Metro Louisville to be include in its planning process health impact assessment work. And last but not least, health and oil policy, something that's coming over from Europe. California's jumped on it. It says that essentially that although the health department doesn't run every department in government, probably everything everybody does reflects or certainly impacts the health of the population. And therefore, we need to take a look at the fact that all policies should be reflective of health. You want to build a new transportation system? How does that affect the health of the community? Do you want to build a new road? How does that affect the health of the community? You want to build a new building or new policy change? How does that affect the health of the populations, particularly most directly affected? Next. And this is the list. We're not going into this, we don't have time. That's another opportunity. But the social determinants of health are now felt by most authorities around the world as being the main drivers of the health of populations. And we're finally starting to get the message here in the United States. We're way behind the curve. Europe is so far in front of us, it isn't funny. But I have two sets of lists for you. This list over here comes directly from WHO, from a document called, I forgot. It'll come back to me at some point. This document lists these. This is the list of social determinants of health that WHO says are most significant. I highlighted the two on the bottom, social gradient and stress. You've seen unnatural causes. You've seen the conversation about social gradient, no doubt, and the conversation about stress. The only thing I would add about stress here is particularly when you look at communities that have been underserved or unserved or discriminated against or left out, you're talking multi-generational levels of stress. And I think there's a factor there. I think it's a multi-generational relationship that turns into end organ failure and early death. This list is the more traditional. You all know this is the definition of socioeconomic status, occupation, education, and income. We always have these debates about which is the most sensitive. Many people think that the gap in income is the most sensitive indicator of health populations. It may very well be, but it's interesting to know that since the gap in excess death in the U.S. is increasing, you know that, right? It's increasing. What do you think is happening to the gap in income? It's increasing probably at a higher rate. So I think there's a direct relationship between this. So when we talk to have these conversations with government, it's really interesting. About we want to fix this thing called the gap in excess death, and then you're going to turn around to them and say, you got to find a way to redistribute income, government. Why do you think that gets over in this environment? But the WHO says again that's one of the main strategies for addressing this issue of health inequities. Race and racism, yes, it is continuing to be an issue. Please don't think that we live in non-racial, post-racial America. I don't know where the hell I came from. Can I say hell on the video? We are not in post-racial America. I often get the question about Dr. Troutman, it's 2010, why are you still talking about racism? And I reflect back to my history and I say, well, in 1607, black folk were brought over here on a cruise ship or two, quickly entered into institutionalized, legalized slavery as the law of the land. that lasted to 1863 or 1865, depending on which number you want to use. From 1865 to 1964, you have Reconstruction, but the quick end of Reconstruction, the rise of the Klan, lynching as the number one, number two cause of death of black men at the turn of the century, segregation in the North, segregation in the South. You know all the data. 1964, first civil rights law. From 1964 to 2010 is what? 46 years. So then I say to them, you tell me how in the hell you eliminate 356 years of this crap in 46 years. It is impossible. Racism is institutionalized in this country, and until we face that fact and have the right conversations and the right, or in the right organizing and activism around it, it's never going to go away. And it directly affects the health of populations that most sincerely affect. And if you know Kamara Jones's work, she talks about phenotype rather than genotype. It means you're discriminated against by the way you look, not by a genetic structure, because the Human Genome Project says there is no difference genetically between one and another. Housing, political power are all parts of the social determinant picture. Next. I think I'm almost done. Interesting to know that this is the way to get the most sustainable and the highest level of result. It's way past the individual, but addressing the social conditions that drive the health of populations. So that these are the most sustainable and the greatest yield by doing this kind of work. Next. So yes, this is the last slide, because I'm back to what I think we need to be doing. And I'm not saying that the 60s methodology is the way to go. That worked in the 60s, it probably would not work today, but the point is that we need a social movement where these placards are saying, you know, yes, jobs now, but they're saying we demand health equity and social justice. Health is a basic human right. And that's how we move this agenda forward. I think that's the last slide. Thank you. Thank you very much.